I'm happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Grove Burnett. He is a teacher of mindfulness. He's founder of the Vallecitos Mountain Ranch. He's an environmental lawyer, and he's going to be teaching some applied mindfulness trainings here in Santa Fe starting next week at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's talk about mindfulness. Is that the same thing as meditation practice?
It is. It's part of the meditation practice. Mindfulness is best defined, and this is based on the explosion in the science of mindfulness in recent years. And researchers define mindfulness as an awareness of our experience and events in the present moment. It's being fully present. And the best way to understand it, I have found, is to understand that there are two different modes of consciousness. This is how modern psychology frames it. We have the doing mode of consciousness, which is critical, analytical thinking, problem solving, figuring things out. These are the skills, the strategies we employ every day in the details of our life, navigating through our lives. But there's an alternative capacity of mind or mode or pattern of consciousness, which is called, the psychologists call it the being mode of consciousness, which is mindfulness, which is a simple, relies simply upon the power of awareness and not that of critical thinking. You know, the word mindfulness or meditation is misunderstood so often in our culture. You frequently hear people say, well, I'm going to go meditate on that, on my relationship, on my problems at work, whatever the circumstance of their life might be. That's not meditation. That's thinking about things and employing analytical problem-solving skills. That's a mode of consciousness that we need to navigate through our, particularly our external problems and our external circumstances of our lives. But there's an alternative to thinking about things. So meditation is not thinking about things. It's actually an alternative to that. It's simply being present and observing what is arising in the present moment in our bodies. What are the sensations arising? What's arising on the mental landscape? Is there agitation, nervousness, angry, whatever it might be? And not getting involved with it. I call it an uninvolved receptivity.
Detachment, so, as
detachment,
they say.
Or the better word is non-attachment. Detachment implies not caring, just turning your back and jettisoning it all. That's not meditation at all or mindfulness. Mindfulness is looking directly into the circumstance of our life, but not becoming involved in it with the content. For instance, a story that's going on in your mind about your work situation. Your supervisor is, you're having a lot of difficulty with. The whole story can build up around that, and we get caught into the content of the story itself, and pretty soon we're thinking this, and we're off, we're gone, right? The mindfulness way of doing it is simply to hold it as a mental event, rather than identifying with the content of it, of just sitting and being with it, observing it. And this quality of being mode, the mindfulness as we call it, which is an ancient practice, 2,500 years old after all, is a completely different way of knowing than thinking about things. Completely different mode of consciousness than critical thinking and problem solving. And it is actually the seat of all our wisdom. It is the seat of insight. It's that place of intuition that we all have experienced and do experience at times. And mindfulness and meditation simply cultivates this capacity of mind. And it's not that one is better than the other, the doing mode or awareness is better than thinking or critical analytical skills. It's just critical analytical skills of thinking and problem solving have eclipsed this innate capacity that all of us have of simply being present and observing carefully and with discernment what is happening in the present moment. Einstein said often that his best ideas came to him when he was not thinking about things.
Well, that's true of, I think, everybody. We've all had that experience.
Absolutely. And all the mindfulness practice is cultivating that capacity. It's not, we're not actually going and constructing something that doesn't already exist and is not a mental faculty of the mind. We're simply developing it. We're nurturing it. We're training it. Because we have so little attention, and so we honor that mode of consciousness so little in this culture of ours. Everything is all about doing and getting and building.
Winning. I mean,
you're
a litigator. You're a trial lawyer. It's such a different way of. I mean, how do those two ways of thinking? On the one hand, getting your case in order and doing everything you've got to do to win, and on the other hand, the sort of mindfulness and non-attachment to the outcome.
Exactly. But they're so complementary, because you have to employ the critical analytical thinking, the planning, the organizing, the figuring it out, putting your case all together. On the other hand, there's a place for actually just abiding in the mode of being, of observing, and that's where the great insights come, not only on particular cases that you may be working on or in your work thing, but also as to the existential questions that all of us are confronted with in our lives, you know. Who are we? Where
right.
did we come from? Where are we going? Those kinds of questions cannot be answered by sitting down and thinking about them. They can only, the answers emerge the degree to which we can cultivate this place of presence, of simply sitting still, even for 10 minutes a day. Does not require huge time or discipline. Will have enormous benefits in all respects.
We're talking to Grove Burnett about mindfulness. Now, I was thinking as I was preparing to converse with you about the meditation courses that I've done in the past that are in the Buddhist tradition, and I mean, Buddhism a lot of the time really bills itself as a non-religion that doesn't require faith, and at the same time, there's a lot of components to it that aren't necessarily directly related to the mindfulness practice, and yet they are. And I wonder what happens when you start pulling them apart. I mean, is it like, do you miss pieces? Like when you can take all the nutritional components of an apple, but it's healthier to eat the apple.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question. I have trained and practiced in the Buddhist tradition for 30 years and been teaching for almost 20 years, and I'm authorized to teach in that tradition, and I do. I teach Buddhist retreats from 2 days to 2 weeks long. But all along, my particular interest has been, particularly in the last two decades, is mindfulness, which is the sort of basic teaching that comes from the Buddhist traditions, has been lifted out and put into a vehicle that is secular, that is non-denominational, and therefore more accessible to people. For instance, when I teach this course every year at the Unitarian Church, which is 6 weeks introduction to the mindfulness practice, I do it in a completely secular, non-religious, non-denominational way, and what happens is that draws so many people who have always wondered, you know, what is the deal here with meditation and mindfulness, particularly in Santa Fe, where we have all sorts of, you know, stuff going on. weird stuff going on.
So people don't want to sign up for the gongs and the...
They don't. Yeah. They don't. You know, it just doesn't work. So what happens at the Unitarian Church, which is a very neutral place for people to come, like, oh, yeah, you know, there's no baggage there because the Unitarians are great, is that people come who would not come to a Buddhist meditation retreat, but who are interested in what is this skill, what is this technique of simply being fully present with our experience, what benefits does it have in my life, how can it transform the way I relate to my life and the changing circumstances of my life. So I get 125 people show up who would never show up for any sort of religious, Buddhist or otherwise, teaching or retreat.
Yeah. Now, what do you actually do in the classes?
It's a combination of two things. One, you cannot understand mindfulness meditation because it is, at its essence, an experiential activity unless you do it. So we have very basic instruction, and we do a sitting, several sittings, beginning 20 minutes long with instruction. And then I do some lecturing and talk about what is mindfulness, as you and I are doing. What are its benefits? How can it be applied in my daily life? And then we do some more sitting. And then I introduce, over the course of 6 weeks, different exercises you can employ in your daily life to actually apply this practice in a very practical way in how we live our lives.
And so people come out of that with basically a different set of tools than they had when they went in.
That is my intention, that they come out with a new set of skills that all of us inherently have, mind you. This is not, you know, dreamed up in Santa Fe 6 years ago or anything. These are ancient techniques and tools that have been mastered and developed over millennia. And yes, my hope is, and it happens, is that people will leave using, being able to use a new skill, a new technique, and hopefully, and this happens, that they'll go to a longer training instead of a evening training for 6 weeks. They'll come to a 2-day retreat or a 3-day retreat where it's a deeper immersion in the practice itself, which can be a profound experience for people to enter that place of silence. It is just so unusual in our society.
Yeah. Well, here we are in the baking company, which is not a place of silence, but beautiful things do happen here.
I know they do.
And it's interesting because I think one of the things that comes out of this type of practice is when you talk about generating world peace or local peace and harmonious interactions among people, it really does start with individuals turning off their reactive apparatus and just starting to listen.
Absolutely. And observing and just not, as you say, not reacting. Instead, we can make a choice of how we are going to respond to a circumstance in our life. We don't have to react from old habitual patterns, which usually cause ourselves harm or somebody else harm. Instead...
Unless you've got good patterns.
Unless you've got good patterns, but most of us have good and bad. It's a mixed bag for most of us. And you do have that choice, therefore, of being able to make the decision, what is the most appropriate way for me to respond here in this situation? How can I respond from a place of compassion, of caring, of understanding? Not meaning I'm going to let the situation leave tire tracks across my face. You can be very appropriate and be firm, if not fierce, about what the appropriate action is. But if it's coming from that place of non-attachment that we were talking about earlier, it's going to be much more skillful.
So you are, among other things, an environmental lawyer, a litigator. So have you cultivated compassion for, oh, I don't know, greedy polluters and things like that?
That is the practice. And there was a stage about 15 years ago in my career where these two came together. I was sort of practicing law as a young, aggressive, very successful, in-your-face warrior. And then I was doing this mindfulness practice over here. And when I brought the two together and actually integrated the practice into my practice of law, it completely transformed how I practiced law.
Were you a better lawyer?
I was definitely a better lawyer. I was definitely a better lawyer, and I was able to sustain myself in a better way. Because when I sat across the table, as I often would, with these really high-powered corporate lawyers who use anger, aggression, hostility as their primary weapons, I could, if I'm not attached and was practicing, instead of immediately reacting, which I was very good at because I can be just as aggressive as any other lawyer, but I could see that they were acting from a place of suffering themselves. And that just sort of would turn the whole thing. I didn't have to give in anything. I just didn't have to respond to that and escalate it.
Right.
It was really interesting. And there were some cases, not always, where I would actually have compassion for some of these people who obviously were in such turmoil and such deep suffering, as most lawyers are anyway, particularly trial lawyers, and it would be a real revelation and change my whole approach of what's the best strategy here for us to be able to come to an agreement that accomplishes both our purposes.
Did it change them?
That's a good question. I don't know. You know, I never... It would change their attitude or their preconception of me, which had been pretty well established as one gets as a very aggressive trial lawyer. Like, oh, you know, you're not the SOB that preceded you in your reputation. Yeah, it's very interesting, that intersection. And this is applied mindfulness. This is where you really take, where the rubber hits the road of, can you take cultivating this different way, mode of consciousness directly into your life, into the life circumstances, and apply it so that you are more skillful and you are more compassionate in how you live your life.
We're talking to Grove Burnett about mindfulness. Now, the classes start on, well, the Mindfulness 101 starts on February 26th, and Mindfulness 102, which is for intermediate practitioners, starts on February 27th, and they run through early April. So that's Tuesday and Wednesday evenings, weekly at 6 o'clock at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. And let's see, if somebody wants to sign up, where should they go?
The easiest thing to do is to go to our website for Vallecitos, VallecitosOrg.
Vallecitos.org. And the Vallecitos Mountain Ranch is outside of Santa Fe, and it's a very, I haven't been there, but I gather it's a very peaceful place where you do longer events of this nature.
Yes, we do longer trainings, mindfulness trainings, and retreats. It's right in the middle of the Carson National Forest between Tres Piedras and Tierra Amarilla, if you've ever taken that drive over the top. We're
right.
12 miles in from pavement, so it's an inholding of 135 acres. It was homesteaded in 1898. We're surrounded by 300,000 acres of Carson National Forest. A mile of the Vallecitos River goes through the ranch. There are seven little mountain lakes on the property, and a lodge, huge log cabin lodge that was built in 1928 and patterned after the Lodge of Yellowstone, with huge cathedral ceilings and walk-in fireplaces. So it's the quintessential place to, as Henry David Thoreau said, to go to the woods, to live deliberately, to front only the essentials of my life. And that's what we really offer it as a sanctuary for people to come and come home to themselves. And in our longer retreats, which may be 2 or 3 days long, for the most part, we do them in silence when we're doing the meditation practice of sitting and walking with instruction, and then talks about how it applies in our lives. And then in the afternoon, we go out and we walk in the wilderness that surrounds the ranch. So it's a really exquisite, it can be, and this has just been confirmed for the last 20 years, it can be a life-changing experience for people.
And it's both, it sounds like it's both a kind of individual and then group activity, depending on the retreat and the time of day in the retreat and so on.
Exactly. In the afternoon, we all take a hike together, off the ranch, into we're bordered on the south by the La Manga Management Unit, which is the largest remaining old growth forest in the entire Carson National Forest. I mean, it's sad to say it's 5,000 acres, but it's absolutely stunning ponderosa old growth, like all of that country used to be pre-settlement.
Right. Grove Burnett is a teacher of mindfulness and founder of the Vallecitos Mountain Ranch, which is on the web at vallecitos.org, ValleCitos. And for those who want to call, the number is 575-751-9613. I'll put a link to it on my website, santafe.radiocafe.org. And once again, Mindfulness 101 and 102 start in the last week of February at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Grove, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.